This week on the show, the Patriots send their fans home happy with an early Christmas present. We're into the dog days of winter for the Bruins and Celtics. And finally, some signs of life from Yawkey Way. All that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. Hello, everybody, and Merry Christmas to you, your family, your friends, and everybody. Welcome to the Calling It podcast. That is right. We have a new episode. Christmas Day, as a wise man once said, no days off. Alex Lebowitz, he is out of the country. He's enjoying himself, but in for him today, joining me, he covers the Patriots for CLNS Media, is Bobby Krivitsky. We are in the remote studios today, so might sound a little different, but hello, Bobby.
Hey, Alex, thank you for having me on. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks for coming on. So I was explaining to you, maybe you'll help with this, because for those of you listening to the show, we like to complain. We like to find things to tweak and dig up minutiae and worst-case scenario and all that. And I woke up this morning ready to be the Grinch on Christmas, and I saw Bob Ryan, who, by the way, you can listen to his podcast, the Bob Ryan podcast on clnsmedia.com, where you can find our show as well. We're also on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. But Bob Ryan, the great Bob Ryan, tweeted this morning, "What do you say we declare a 24-hour moratorium on all bitching, moaning, and hating, and remember why we're sports fans in the first place?" So my challenge to you, Bobby, and more specifically to myself, is let's honor Bob Ryan's moratorium. Let's see if we can do a whole show, a whole 35-ish minute show, whatever it is, without bitching, moaning, or hating. What do you say?
Well, Alex, I'm a glass half full kind of guy to begin with, but let me ask you this. Bob Ryan, he started that tweet by saying, let's remember why we became fans in the first place. Is it possible that a large part of the reason you became a fan was that ability to express your emotion, to vent, maybe at times to redirect some feelings and channel them through your passion and your love of sports? So perhaps you would be dishonoring Bob Ryan's request by being unloyal, unfaithful to who you really are at heart.
No, I want to be happy with sports. Let's try this. And it should be easy here off the top. It is, of course, a Victory Monday on the Calling It podcast for the New England Patriots, who defeated the Buffalo Bills on Sunday afternoon. Was it 37-16, right?
That is correct.
I have it in front of me. 37-16. It was a little dicey there at halftime. They came out big second half, 24 unanswered points. I don't want to touch on this a lot, and Bobby and I actually, we were on the Patriots Roundtable. You can check that out on Twitter, at PatriotsCLNS, for our full kind of breakdown of the game. We're just going to hit the high points here. Catch or no catch?
I thought it was a play that was so close, whatever the ruling on the field was, and I did think it was a catch. It would have been too difficult to overturn, but once again, Al Riveron comes through for the Patriots.
So, I mean, technically, they got it right. He didn't have possession. And the Charles Clay one's ridiculous. If people think that was a catch. But I think they need what I like to call the Aunt Ruthie rule, which is if you're 92-year-old Aunt Ruthie sitting on the couch, not a football fan, doesn't really watch, it's just on and she's there with the family. If she thinks it's a catch, it's a catch. If she doesn't think it's a catch, it's not a catch. You know, that's what they need. They need to get a bunch of people who never watch football. And just, it's a one-shot thing. You come into the NFL office for Sunday, and you say, it's a catch or not a catch. Just eye test. That's how they really should do it, right? Because that's what we're all kind of doing at home. It's eye test until you see those super slow-motion, high-def replays. You don't know.
If you go and you look at how it's phrased, what defines a catch in the NFL rulebook, there should not be that much wording around something that theoretically should be so simple. And as a result, I feel like different officiating crews might see what is and isn't a catch differently. And then you have the league office and the officials there sitting in Park Avenue reviewing these calls with a different mentality as well. So as a result, you have this discord between the two units, and that results in fans just losing their minds, people not being certain anymore. Is this play going to be upheld as a catch? Is it going to be overturned? It looks cut and dry to me, but who knows what Al Riveron's thinking? Who knows what the officials at the game are thinking? And as a result, no one is on the same page. It's way too convoluted a rule over what should be a simple and easy concept for everyone to understand.
Okay, but so let's move on out of the actual football, because we want to talk about that. And the Patriots, as of right now, thanks to Jimmy Garoppolo, actually, have a first-round bye locked up as the Niners beat the Jaguars yesterday. We're recording this Monday afternoon, so I'm going to guess Pittsburgh's going to beat a T.J. Yates-led Houston team, but they don't have Antonio Brown. You don't know. They could potentially have everything locked up and not have much to play for next week against Miami, but we'll look ahead to the playoffs. You know, they're going to get a good team in round one, whatever the case may be. And what stood out to me yesterday, and I guess you can go back the last really 3 weeks, starting with that Miami game on Monday night, the Patriots always have been, and especially this year, a team that starts hot and you know, scored touchdowns on the first drive, scoring touchdowns out of the half. They come out, they grab the momentum. Whenever there's a 50-50 chance the game go either way, it always seems like the Patriots are the team jumping in and saying, this is our game, we are here, like just taking control situation. They haven't done that the last 3 weeks. They had a 3-and-out on their first drive. They came out weak out of the half and to start the game against Pittsburgh last week. Does this concern you going forward that the Patriots have been very uncharacteristically slow starters?
It doesn't raise a new concern, put it that way, because I think we can see the flaws on this Patriots defense. And so when you combine their shortcomings with the reality that the game is a chess match for Bill Belichick, and he starts off the game trying to figure out as quickly as possible how you're going to play, what your strengths are, and how you're going to look to exploit the weaknesses in his defense. And so the moment the ball is kicked off, he is full systems go, trying to figure that out and make his adjustments. That's why you see so many times the Patriots defense give up an extended opening drive on the first, sometimes the first two, sometimes even the first three series of the game. But as long as they're able to bend but don't break, which they did yesterday. They gave up multiple 60-plus yard drives, but only gave up field goals, not touchdowns. As long as they do that, it's just giving Bill Belichick more time to figure things out and put a new game plan in place for the second half to be able to stop them. Now, Alex, I hate to hijack your show and respond to a question with a question, but given that the Niners are sending the Patriots their second-round pick, would you have preferred to see Jimmy Garoppolo help clinch a first-round bye for the Patriots or lose that game and give the Patriots a better draft position, at least going into Week 17?
Ooh, see, I think as long as that's a top 12 pick in the second round, which I think it has to be at this point, I think they keep that pick. My long-term thoughts for that pick are they package that in their first and move up and take a quarterback. That's kind of my running plan. But you mentioned the defensive game plan there. Remember the first couple weeks of the year, just how awful the defense was. They were doing things like putting Trey Flowers into coverage and
still do it.
Playing, let me get to that. They're playing like giving 5 yard cushions to receivers, playing off receivers, letting the underneath stuff go. They stopped doing that for a stretch there. They've gone back to it. Has Matt Patricia peaked? Have we seen, is Matt Patricia getting too creative for his own good? I feel like they have so much talent on this defense. Malcolm Butler, incredibly talented. Stephon Gilmore, maybe not as talented as some people say, but he's a good cornerback. We know about the defensive front with Trey Flowers, Dietrich Wise, Alan Branch, Malcolm Brown. They have some shortcomings in the linebacking core this year, but I think they've gotten less out of guys than they should. I thought Cassius Marsh was actually a decent player. I think, believe it or not, they could actually get more out of a Landon Roberts. I feel like the defensive shortcomings are on the players. I feel like it's Matt Patricia's just putting these guys in a position to fail, and he's always been so good at maximizing what he gets out of everybody. That's why Malcolm Butler is Malcolm Butler. I'm very concerned going forward. I don't know what Matt Patricia's strategy, thought process, game plan is here these last couple weeks, but it really reminds me of what he was doing in September instead of the middle 2 months of the season. I want to see him go back to that. Get more aggressive on defense. Play bump and run coverage. Get up on your man. Contest the comeback routes. They just don't do that. They're not doing that. It's something the last time they played defense this passively were the years of Chad Brown, Monty Beisel, Hank Poteet, Earthwin Moreland. And yeah, when you have those guys, you let the team march down the field 80 yards because they're going to do it anyway. But they have the talent this year, and they're just not playing with it. And it's very frustrating. And here I am, bitching and moaning and complaining. I lasted, 5 minutes? I'm sorry, Bob. All right, so there you go. Ring the bell. I'm
but
out.
You're being true to who you are and why you got into sports and the that root of your fandom. I think you're still honoring Bob Ryan's request, at least to some degree. There's a gray area, despite that tweet seeming so cut and dry.
I'm not bitching. I'm not moaning. I'm just questioning. We can't question.
You're being true to yourself. That's why people love this show, Alex. And to be honest.
Okay, I already brought you on the show. You don't need to start blatantly lying to flatter me.
Anyways, my point being here about your question is that it's about complementary football. And people might not always like how the sausage is made, but as Mike Petralia, Mike Dussault, and myself have discussed continuously throughout this season on Patriots Roundtable, when you have Tom Brady on the other side of the football, it's not about being aggressive, letting the edge rushers pin their ears back and get after the quarterback. It's about, especially when you have a coach like Bill Belichick who will not blink, he dares you. He dares you not to beat yourself. If you can consistently march down the field chunks at a time, get to the red zone and finish off enough of those drives with touchdowns to put up more points than Tom Brady, he'll tip his cap to you at the end of the game.
But that's kind of what concerns me. So much of what the Patriots do is predicated on playing from ahead. And right, we saw that in the Super Bowl. He even said we were lost because our game plan was that we'd be playing up for most of the game. And yeah, for most teams, to game plan on playing with the lead is asinine, but you can do it when you have that quarterback. But the defense hasn't helped them with that at all. We saw it yesterday. They want to play from ahead. They wanted to run the ball off, but at a certain point, they had to throw. You could tell more than they were planning on because they didn't have the lead they thought they would have. I just want to see them get Tom Brady those leads. I think that's why his numbers have been down a couple weeks, the last couple interceptions, because he's being forced into situations where he's uncomfortable, and any quarterback, no matter how good they are going to start forcing passes in those moments. He feels like he has to – to go back to the earth when Moreland, Monty Beisel, defenses, and you remember at times in those years Brady would struggle because you could tell he felt like he was the only guy on the field who could win them that game. The Giselle Bundchen tweet, right? Tom can't throw and catch the football, and I feel like he's back in that mindset this year at times for the first time in a long time, and we're seeing kind of that late 2000s post ACL injury Tom Brady again. I just want to see them get him the help he deserves.
I think they have plenty of weapons offensively, even without Julian Edelman. You look at who's on the field yesterday, where he's missing two more of his top producers at the skill positions in Rex Burkhead and James White, and you still have Brandon Cooks, Danny Amendola, Deion Lewis, Rob Gronkowski. It's still a really good team. Chris Hogan wasn't playing either. So when you factor in that all these guys, with the exception of Edelman, are coming back for the postseason, or at least are expected to, there's plenty of talent on the offensive side of the ball. And yes, Alex, ideally, you're playing from ahead. And plenty of times the Patriots are that good that they are, in fact, doing so. But if I told Bill Belichick going into Sunday that at halftime it would be 13-13 and Buffalo would have had two 60-plus yard drives that ended in field goals, he would say, sign me up. That right. Gives him plenty of time to figure out how Buffalo's operating, to make the necessary second half adjustments. And it's just about, again, the lead is great. That's what every team wants, but it's just about keeping it close because he firmly believes in a strategy and a concept and a philosophy that has produced arguably the greatest dynasty in the history of sports.
So I would, in the spirit of Bob Ryan's tweet, I will end it on this note. I believe it was Adam Kaufman who had it yesterday, if I'm getting this right. The Patriots defense, they've gotten some help. Patriots defense hasn't allowed a touchdown in 4 weeks. So they're doing something right. I mean, it's been a lot of field goals, but they're doing something right. Real quick here, Bobby, before we wrap it up, one last thing I want to touch on. Let's say Pittsburgh wins tonight. So the Patriots do need a win against Miami next week to clinch home field advantage. How much is Rob Gronkowski playing? Deion Lewis, you know, that core.
I think all these guys are playing, especially when you factor in not only how important they are to the offense, but who's behind them? Dwayne Allen and Jacob Hollister don't give you much in the passing game. And then you figure to be without Rex Burkhead, there's a good chance you're without James White as well. So I think these guys are playing, and yes, you can try and manage them over the course of the game like they did against Buffalo, but I don't expect too much variance from how they game planned for the Bills, unless, of course, they jump out to a huge lead. The sooner they can pull these guys, the better, but they're not going to do so until they feel comfortable.
I'm just, look, I think for everybody's sake, we need a big time, we being Patriots Nation needs a big time Houston upset tonight, because then, you know, you put Brady, Gronk, Lewis, all of them on bubble wrap, we don't see him for 3 weeks. All right, there are two other teams playing in Boston right now that are playing pretty well. It would be unfair if we didn't get to them. We'll talk about that on the other side. You're listening to Callin' It, powered by CLNS.
Callin' It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to Callin' It. I'm Alex Barth, Bobby Krivitsky in for Alex Lebowitz. And I just want to remind everybody, you can find our show, if you want to go back and listen to old episodes, find us Spitting Wrong Takes on clnsmedia.com. You can also find us on the CLNS Media app. Follow us on Twitter at Callin' It Podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes as well. We hope you do. We got a bunch of great stuff coming up in 2018. This is the last show of 2017, Bobby Krivitsky. And maybe no team has had a more dynamic year, a more jaw-dropping year in Boston than the Boston Celtics, between their run last year and Isaiah Thomas to this offseason and the, what did it end up at, 17-game winning streak? And it's really a roller coaster year. It's weird. It's been really all positives, but it still feels like a roller coaster year, right, for the Celtics?
Well, I think people are concerned that the other shoe is starting to drop. The reality is settling in for the Celtics as we see the schedule take its toll on the team. We see the lack of depth, losing not only Gordon Hayward, but Marcus Morris frequently out of the lineup, taking its toll on this team. So people are starting to be more aware of their shortcomings, of the effect that the injuries are having. And so at one point, I think people were a bit more bullish on the Celtics than they are heading into Christmas.
Well, let's look at it this way. They are coming off a stretch. And again, we're recording this on Monday, just so in case you're like, why didn't they mention this game when we're doing it? They're coming off a stretch. They lost to some bad teams. They lost to Miami. They lost to New York. They lost to the Jazz. They went 1-1 against the Bulls in a 3-week stretch. And now coming up, so recording this Monday, they have the Wizards Christmas Day. We'll see how that goes. You probably already know when you're listening to this. Four of their next six are against playoff teams. I got the Wizards. The Hornets are under 500, but Kemba always scares me. The Rockets, that's going to be a heck of a game. The Nets, and then back-to-back, the Cavs and the Timberwolves. How much are we going to learn about this team in this stretch? Because I think this right here, look, when they went on that winning streak, that was great. But they didn't play too many outstanding teams. I know they had the big win against the Thunder. They had a couple quality wins in there, but they were spaced out. They are going to go bang, bang, bang against the playoff teams here in the next, call it, week and a half. It's really time to see how are the kids going to handle this, right? They're, what are they, 30-ish games into the season, 27-9, so they're 36 games in. Most college players play between 30 and 35 games. So the kids, you know, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, those guys, they're experiencing more basketball now than they've ever played in their life. The wear and tear gets on. They're playing tough opponents night in and night out. Most of them are at home, so that they luck out with that. But I think we're really going to see now, we know this is a good team, but I think next week and a half will tell us, okay, is this team actually a threat to, say, go into Cleveland in a game seven and beat the Cavs? Are they that kind of team? Are they a team that not necessarily can we label as a final favorite, but as a finals possibility? I think that's what we're going to see here next couple weeks.
Well, I think we are going to learn a lot about this team during this stretch, and not just because it's a difficult stretch. The whole season has been difficult for the Celtics. They're typically playing four games a week, which is grueling, and you add that into them being shorthanded most nights, being such a young team. This whole season has been a tough stretch. But the reason I think we're about to learn so much about this Celtics team is because Brad Stevens has been clamoring for December 30th. It can't get here fast enough. He doesn't want Christmas. He doesn't want New Year's. He wants December 30th. Why does he have that date circled on his calendar and not the other holidays that come up at this time of year? That's the next time this team can practice. They've been playing so frequently that they've hardly practiced at all this season, which makes the success they've had that much more impressive. So a chance to settle down, take a breath, and make the necessary adjustments is going to be huge for them moving forward. He's already talked about putting more on Jason Tatum's plate, and they've begun to execute that over the weekend when they played the Bulls. The first play of the game was a set called for Jason Tatum. They're starting to use him more, operating as the ball handler out of pick and rolls. And once again, it's another area where he's thriving.
Yeah, you mentioned a lot there. And the one thing I want to kind of talk about is them being shorthanded most nights. And Marcus Morris, it sounds like that's a really weird injury. They said he's day-to-day. He's going to be out a couple of months, but he will sporadically play here and there in that stretch. But I am concerned about their lack of a scorer off the bench. Obviously, we know Marcus Smart's not going to be that guy. I still think he's a very valuable bench piece. But there was a name I saw, you know, I'm just throwing something against the wall here, but there was a name I saw last week that kind of stuck out to me. He's a free agent, played a little bit last year. Monta Ellis. Now, can he run anymore? Probably not. But I bet if you put Monta Ellis in 15 minutes a night, I mean, shoot or shoot. They need a guy like that. They need a guy who's going to come in. They need Eddie House, James Posey. Come in, shoot the ball for 10, 15 minutes, spread the floor, and then go back to the bench. And every good Celtics team the last couple of years has had that guy. I'm not saying this isn't a good Celtics team, but for them to really hit their peak and hit their ceiling and what we think they're capable of, they have to add another piece. And maybe Brad's waiting for the deadline to use that Gordon Hayward exception they have. And if he's waiting and he makes a move at the deadline, fine. But I don't know about you. I am getting a little concerned that they haven't added anybody.
You got to be patient with this. And I think not just fans, but even Danny Ainge sees the stretch they're going through. And there's more urgency than there was during the win streak, for example, to add another player to this rotation. Monta Ellis is a name that still has some juice behind it, but nonetheless, he doesn't fit the system. He's not a good defender, to put it mildly. He doesn't have.
That was just a name. I just want a shooter. You know,
I'm just shooting down Monta Ellis, who I was.
I would classify him, Alex,
more as a scorer than a shooter. And to add another streaky player to a bench that consists of Marcus Smart and Terry Rozier in the backcourt is playing with fire.
Although if you put together Monta Ellis and Marcus Smart, you essentially have one complete player. But I mean, basically,
you have
what I'm
a Hall of Famer if you combine those two into one player.
Can we go back 10 years and just bring Eddie House back? That's what I really want.
If we can do that and bring KG and James Posey back, I'm on board. That would certainly make a difference and boost the Celtics' chances to not only get to the finals, but knock off Golden State. What I expect is for the Celtics to continue to be patient in regards to using the disabled player exception. There's a lot of names out there. None of them are a perfect fit. We might have seen a move already or in the coming weeks, which I don't anticipate to happen if that were the case. So it's going to be interesting to see who they get. I think ideally they would like a player who can play the three and the four and bring them the shooting they need off the bench.
And I mean, go like one last thing here on the Celtics, just going forward, with that storyline, I just totally lost my train of thought. Happy Christmas, everybody. This is what happened.
Too much eggnog.
Right, when you work on the holidays. Going forward with the Celtics, and we've seen that. We saw the game against Indiana, the one that they lost against Miami was close. This kind of cardiac kids thing. How much longer can they do this? Because those are generally the games a young team loses, right? That you have the younger team and kind of the lights get bright. It comes down to the finals. It's been the young players. It hasn't been Kyrie in those situations winning those games. It's been Jason Tatum. It was Terry Rozier in Indiana. It's been Jaylen Brown. I'm wondering how much longer they can. And don't get me wrong, I love it. I would love to see them win every game at the buzzer, because my gripe with basketball is really between the first 5 minutes and the last 5 minutes, you can kind of not watch and you'll still get the gist of the game most nights. But there is nothing more exciting than a basketball game that's tied in the final minute. So, but I'm just wondering how much longer can they do this? But if they keep winning like this on the flip side, I feel like this is going to be huge for them going into the playoffs because you have 19-year-old Jason Tatum knowing, okay, if it's a playoff game, but if this comes down to the final seconds, I've been there. I've done that. I know we can win that game, and I feel like there's a lot of young players in the league that it takes them years to develop that mindset.
In a day where the three-point shot is such a heavy part of the game, baked into the Celtics' DNA right now is the fact that you're going to continue to consistently get those wild, entertaining finishes, because it doesn't matter if they have a big lead or they're down big, you fully expect them to come back or to blow the lead. And on most nights, that happens and produces these fantastic finishes. And yes, they've been able to win plenty of them. And for as much as it's been about a different player stepping up each time, seemingly, at the core of it is Kyrie Irving, who even against Indiana, Terry Rozier gets the shine for the steal and the game-winning dunk. Kyrie Irving hit two big threes late in that game to put Rozier in a position to make that play, along with Bogdan Bogdanovic, of course, throwing the ball up for grabs.
Of course.
And on top of that, it's been their great defense. It's been one of the best in the league all season. For a long stretch, it was the best in the NBA. And so while you see these lulls, typically they're able to rally at the end of the games around Kyrie Irving offensively and buckling down defensively to win and pull out these miraculous finishes.
And let's just go real quick here because we are up against it, but I do want to touch on the Bruins because they were, what, 17-3-3, I think, in their last 23. It's something like that. They've been the hottest team in hockey for the last couple weeks. So I ask Alex Lebowitz this every week, and I wish I could ask him this week because I think I'd finally get him. I am in. This is a playoff team. They better be a playoff team. I'm counting on them making the playoffs. I wouldn't be mad if they added somebody at the deadline. I'm buying in on this team. I'm all in. I'm ready to go. Are you in on the Bruins, Bobby, as a playoff team? Not I think they might make it. Not I think they could make it. Are your expectations for them playoffs or disappointment?
Barring the obvious caveat of injuries, I'm all in on the Bruins making the playoffs, 10 toes down. I came into the season with that expectation. It was a disappointing start as they battled through injuries. And, yeah, despite the fact that their range of possible outcomes includes missing the playoffs, I fully expected this team going into the season to make it. Then they went through a difficult stretch trying to figure themselves out in the midst of all these injuries and Rask's poor performance. And then all of a sudden, of the most unexpected heroes, Anton Khudobin, Dobie, rallies this team around his strong performance. They play hard in front of him. They get hot. They get healthy. They sustain their strong performance. And now you have Tuukka Rask playing one of the best stretches of his career for the past month.
And, you know, I said on the show, I think it was a month ago, you know, a team with two quarterbacks doesn't really have a quarterback. A team with two goalies doesn't really have a goalie. So I'm not a big Tuukka guy. I would like to see them alternate a little more, but I just don't believe Tuukka can keep this up because I've seen him get this hot before, and it's normally his peaks, as high as they are, he's just so inconsistent, are normally followed by the lowest valleys. And I feel like, you know, when I say get out, we are ahead, I don't mean trade him or anything like that. But, you know, now that he's hot, give Khudobin a little bit more time because Khudobin's been playing well. And so you can extend this hot streak of Tuukka Rask, right? If he, I know it's a really arbitrary number, but if he has 10 more games playing at this level, if you can get those to last, you know, 2 months instead of a month, right? That's huge. So as good as Tuukka Rask is playing, and this has been the problem, right? In the past, he gets really hot, and I'm not saying it's on him because a lot of times what happens, he gets this hot, and they used to do this with Tim Thomas. The team completely leans on him. He gets absolutely worn out, totally beat up. And then you get to the end of the season games he needs to win and either plays like crap or he's not healthy enough to go out there. So I think here we go. We've seen this story before, right? Is it now time to change the way the story's written? I know Tuukka's playing well, but fight every urge you have and give him some more nights off. So when you have that game in Ottawa, right, in March that you need to win, Tuukka's actually fresh instead of, you know, playing his 70-somethingth game of the year.
And this is Bruce Cassidy's mission moving forward this season. when Jimmy Murphy asked Tuukka Rask after the win against the Red Wings, what's been the key to your hot performance this month where he's been one of the league's best goaltenders during this stretch? He credited the defense and also said that, well, I'm just not getting shitty bounces anymore. And the reality is that pacing him, that Hudobin's strong performance has also been a huge factor in being able to keep Rask fresh and sustain this hot performance. So while the defense might be the most consistent part of the equation, having a backup goaltender you can rely on to keep Rask fresh and get the most out of him when he's between the pipes is the second biggest part of the equation.
All right, so that's the Bruins talk. Obviously, in the spirit of Bob Ryan, you know, we normally like to complain about stuff. Bruins not giving us much to complain about right now. Real quick on the other side, Red Sox finally made a move this week. Huge franchise-altering decision. What was it? We'll talk about it next. You're listening to Callin' It, powered by CLNS.
Callin' It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
You know Dasher and Dancer, Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen. But do you recall, what's that? The most famous reindeer of all. Come on!
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Welcome back to Callin' It, powered by CLNS, Christmas edition. Happy Merry Christmas, happy holidays, happy new year to you and yours, our final show of 2017. We will have a show next week. Obviously, we're not going to skip a show going on the first week of the NFL playoffs. It will not be Monday, however. It will be midweek at some point. Not totally sure about that yet. You can get caught up on all that. You know, keep in touch with us at Callin' It Podcast on Twitter. You can also subscribe on iTunes. Check us out on the brand new CLNSmedia.com. I'm joined by Bobby Krivitsky today. Covers the Patriots for CLNS. He is in for Alex Lebowitz, who is off enjoying himself on a vacation. So every 6 months, I do a show with Adam in July, and here we are in December, and he is MIA. But without Lebowitz in the house, and I'm generally more guilty of this than he is, being negative. Bob Ryan tweeting out this morning, what do you say we declare a 24-hour moratorium on all bitching, moaning, and hating, and remember why we're sports fans in the first place? We've tried to be positive today, Bobby. We've done okay.
I would say pretty well by your standards.
Right. It hasn't been as bad as usual, but that's all about to come to an end. So earlier this week, I think it was on Tuesday, correct me if I'm wrong, the Red Sox finally showed some signs of life. They made a free agent signing, bringing back Mitch Moreland on, it was a 2-year deal, I believe. Yeah, it must have been really early in the week if I can't remember. 2-year deal. It's about $13 million AAV. So, you know, they got him for about market, passed on Eric Hosmer, still waiting on JD Martinez as we record this at 1 p.m. On Monday, the 25th of December. So, we'll see what's going on with Martinez. I'm getting a little more concerned, though, the longer that goes. Obviously, they passed on Stanton. We know the whole offseason. Are the Red Sox being crafty, or are they just asleep at the wheel?
I would say they're being crafty. They have their number one target.
No, I put the positive thing aside. You can be honest here.
I'm being honest. I think they're being...
Really?
I think they're being crafty. I think they're smart to wait out JD Martinez. At the same time, they have to get him. So I think it's understood that, hey, if another team comes in and floors you with a big offer, run it by us because we might just match it. And quite frankly, I think they have to. So should there be some concern about them leaving the door open? Of course. But at the end of the day, I expect the Red Sox to get this done because, quite frankly, Martinez and Scott Boras have all the leverage. So it's a frustrating situation for fans. You'd like to see the Red Sox do more right now, and part of this is that it's the offseason. You can make the case that they're the fourth team in this town right now with Bruins' hot performance, the Celtics season going as well as it is, and, of course, the Patriots are kings. You can make the case they're fourth right now in the offseason, which, quite frankly, it shouldn't happen when you're right in the thick of free agency or even still coming towards the end of it. It shouldn't be the case for the Boston Red Sox, but here we are with the frustration about the lack of spending, the lack of moves. And yet, on the other hand, when you just take a deep breath and look rationally, Alex, I think Dombrowski, to this point, is playing this well. If he loses Martinez, it's a different story.
But aren't you concerned, especially because it's a Boris guy, that it's taking this long? Right? All the beat writers, all the insiders, they had this as a sure thing a week ago. So what's changed in the last week that he's not a Red Sox already?
I don't think anything's changed other than the fact that neither side has blinked, which is not a new development. Scott Boras wants 7 years for J.D. Martinez, and the Red Sox look at that and say, that's too long of a contract. We're going to wait it out. J.D., go into Christmas with your family without a new contract, without being signed yet, and let's see how you respond after the holidays. And it's going to be interesting to see which side caves. But quite frankly, I think that Martinez and Boras have the leverage.
See, I'm getting worried he's not going to end up. And I don't know necessarily if I want him here. He's a 30-year-old guy. He had a good half a season in a hitter's ballpark in Arizona. I don't know. I certainly don't want him for 7 years. At that point, I'll pass. You know, 5 years, maybe we can talk. Let's see what the money is. But, and I said this last week, when they passed on Stanton to me, you're giving up, you know, pardon my wordplay, a home run. You're giving up a home run opportunity to get Giancarlo Stanton for pennies on the dollar. And J.D. Martinez doesn't make that up to me. J.D. Martinez is not that guy. You want to talk about next summer Bryce Harper? Yeah, he's that guy. And I'd rather have Harper. If the long play here is to not spend any money this summer and then go get Harper next summer, fine. I don't know if Dave Dombrowski's that forward thinking. So, and he's also, the one thing we know about Dave Dombrowski, he's very impulsive, right? He is very impulsive. He is very win in the now, that kind of guy. And that's why I'm like, well, why hasn't Martinez signed? Because it would be the most win now move you could make. It really only helps them for one season, this one upcoming season. And I could see Dombrowski being, all right, well, fine. It'll help us this year. It might save my job. So sure, take the 7 years. So I'm getting concerned that he hasn't signed on the dotted line yet.
Dombrowski, he's going against his reputation in being patient. Usually he has his target. It's not necessarily something, I agree with the term impulsive to describe him, but it's not necessarily he finds a target and goes full throttle to get him. It's that he identifies who they need to get through a process, and usually he's right, not always, and then he goes all out full throttle to get his guy. In this case, he's identified his target through that same process, only it doesn't call for let's go out and hand over a blank check like we did to David Price in order to sign him immediately. It calls for being patient and having a genuine negotiation. So I like Dombrowski's patient approach here, provided he gets the player. J.D. Martinez, rather, is a more complete hitter than Giancarlo Stanton. I wanted Stanton. I think he transforms the lineup more than J.D. Martinez does, but this is not a fluke of production from J.D. Martinez. He changed his swing 3 years ago, and ever since, the results have been real and spectacular, to borrow a line from Seinfeld. And as far as the Bryce Harper play goes, it doesn't matter if that's the plan or not, because not only do I think that even if the Red Sox offer the most money, which is not the case, that they won't get Bryce Harper, even if they waited and signed Bryce Harper and executed that plan, that's another year of wear and tear on Chris Sale and David Price. So I think that's a horrendous plan, as much as I would love it if they do in fact sign Bryce Harper. And so then the reality becomes we really need to maximize this 3-year window of Chris Sale while we have him under team control. And J.D. Martinez, as much as I would like and be in favor of that signing, it's not enough, Alex. This team still needs more juice, especially when you consider that it's going to come at the expense of Hanley Ramirez. So they're adding one power hitter, and as inconsistent, as down a year as that was for Hanley Ramirez, taking another name out of the lineup that has home run potential, it really doesn't move the needle anywhere close to the degree it needs to get the Red Sox into the World Series contention.
Well, the one other thing I want to talk, and you mentioned it very briefly with David Price, the one thing before we wrap up the show here, are people not concerned enough about this pitching staff? Because I'm worried. They have, and we don't know what's going on with Stephen Wright, and obviously, you know, if he's suspended, he's suspended, and the MLB is totally right in doing so. But who do they have for Major League starting pitching? Obviously, Chris Sale. Who knows who you're going to get from Porcello? Who knows who you're going to get from Pomerantz? where is Price going to be? Is he going to be in the rotation or is he going to be in the bullpen? Who do they have left in terms of major league starting pitching? Doug Fister signed a contract. He's gone. Henry Owens had some major league experience. He's not here. Brian Johnson, I guess, is your fifth starter as it stands right now, but he's had very minimal experience, even though he's had some success at the major league level. I'm concerned about the pitching staff. I'm probably more concerned about that than the lineup. JD Martinez or no. They don't have five major league starting pitchers. And what I'm worried they're going to do, right, is a lot of teams you see in the situation, you see teams go out, they'll sign a familiar name at bargain. I'm worried they're going to sign Clay Buchholz to shore up the back end of the rotation. He's a free agent. I feel like more people need to focus on. I know that there's still the Jackie Bradley Jr. trade hanging out there, and that's contingent on what happens with Martinez, and that could maybe turn into a starting pitcher. But for everybody talking about JD Martinez and passing on Stanton and this and that, and I'm guilty of all of that, can we please talk about the starting pitching? Because they don't have any.
Alex, this might be your negativity rubbing off on me. I think there are question marks throughout that pitching staff, including the bullpen, including the two guys that people put the most faith in. Chris Sale, there have long been concerns about how well he'll age for a guy with a thin frame who throws so hard, even with him taking velocity off intentionally in recent seasons. You look at him petering out once again at the end of last season, and sure, you can put the blame on the Red Sox and John Farrell for overusing him. We have no idea how he will perform at the end of the season and in the postseason and how durable he will be at the most important stretch. You look at Craig Kimbrell, a flamethrower. You just never know when the flame is going to be extinguished. Is he going to lose that little bit of velocity that makes all the difference? Is he going to be more inconsistent with his pitching location like he was two seasons ago? So they're the guys that you have the most confidence in, you don't know. And everyone else, wildly inconsistent. David Price, huge letdown in Boston. Rick Porcello wins the Cy Young, obviously an outlier for his career trajectory. You don't know what you're going to get in Porcello, in Pomerantz, who had a great season last year, but you expect to drop off. Eduardo Rodriguez, all three guys who comprise the rest of that rotation behind their quote-unquote big two, capable of playing very well, but consistently inconsistent.
There needs to be something under the tree for Red Sox fans in the next couple of weeks, or we could be looking at a long summer. That's going to do it for this episode of the Call in the Podcast. Bobby, thank you for coming on, joining us. Always a pleasure.
Thank you for having me on. Feliz Navidad.
Hopefully everybody enjoyed that. A little something you need to get away from your family there on Christmas Day. Sneak away, put us on. It was, what, about 40 minutes? So we went a little over what we thought, but a little Christmas bonus for everybody. Like I said at the beginning of the segment, we will have a show next week. I highly doubt it will be Monday. Still kind of putting it all together, but there will be a NFL playoff preview of some sort up next week. If you follow us on Twitter at Call It Podcast, you'll see it there. Follow us on iTunes, subscribe on iTunes. Obviously, you can get it downloaded right to your phone. And of course, you can get all of our content. And me and Bobby talked about the Patriots as well earlier. If you want more of us on the Patriots, on clnsmedia.com and on Twitter at CLNS. So, hope everybody has a very good holiday. Hope the dinner is excellent. We got a white Christmas shoveling all of it. I hope everybody enjoys it. Have a happy new year. Have a safe new year. Let's have more peace and love in 2018. I will talk to you again next year in 2018. Until then, for Bobby Krivitsky, I'm Alex Barth. This has been Calling It, powered by CLNS.